Hello there. Today is Tuesday, May 17th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, world powers back lifting the Libyan arms embargo. Hillary Clinton says the first gentleman will be taken out of retirement. Donald Trump says he may not have a good relationship with Britain's leader. Is Budweiser changing its name?
Budweiser is doing all it can to reinforce its image as an American brand.
Also ahead, Warren Buffett takes a big bite into Apple. It's all on today's International Edition. World powers say they will back Libya's new government in its bid to lift a UN arms embargo, a move that could help the government combat internal security threats and fight the Islamic State. Secretary of State John Kerry announced the decision following a multi-nation meeting chaired by the United States and Italy.
We're not talking about troops and boots and that kind of intervention. We continue right now to assess the ISIL activity that's taking place, and we're working with our partners to determine the best way forward to help Libya to be able to deal with that threat.
International Edition's Susan Yackey spoke to VOA State Department reporter Pam Dawkins about what else came out of the meeting.
He also said there was a need for accelerated humanitarian aid to Libya. In addition to the U.S., Italy, and Libya, there are 19 other countries that were represented. These are regional countries that were represented today, along with officials from the African Union, the Arab League, the European Union, and the U.N. The entire group relayed a joint communique at the end of talks, and in this communique, the group said that it was committed to supporting all efforts of the Libyan government to enhance its political outreach throughout the country.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the challenges Libya is currently facing?
Yes, Libya's prime minister described the situation in his country as very bad, saying Libya is facing both economic and security challenges. He said Libya is seeking more international assistance for training and equipping its forces. He was not specific, but said he would provide a list of what was needed as soon as the UN arms embargo was lifted. The country, of course, continues to face a challenge from the Islamic State, which has set up a base in Libya and used that base to launch attacks in countries including neighboring Tunisia. Kerry said the international community was working with Libya to respond to the terrorist threat posed by Daesh.
Well, what is next for these diplomats on Libya? Do they plan to meet again? Where's this go?
Well, the work to support Libya will continue at the UN as well as in the U.S. and the regional countries that were present today. The U.S., on its part, pledged to continue to support Libya in terms of security cooperation and humanitarian assistance.
VOA's International Edition continues. Let's turn now to what's trending online with our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori.
So what are we talking about today?
There are two stories from the Silicon Valley, one about the Apple stocks and another one about a speech by Sheryl Sandberg, who, as you know, is the chief operating officer of Facebook. Let's begin with Apple. Investor Warren Buffett purchased 9.8 million shares during the first quarter. He is touted as one of the best investors of our time. So this is great news for Apple shares that have gone down more than 10% so far this year.
Absolutely, I see. So what's the reaction like online to this?
Well, mostly people are still cautious. One person commented on a Facebook post by the Wall Street Journal on the purchase that if you do choose to own it, referring to Apple stocks, it should only make up a small piece of a well-diversified portfolio.
I see, so much like any other stock. So, okay, let's move on to now the Facebook story. What's the buzz about that?
So Sandberg gave a commencement speech at the University of California, Berkeley over the weekend, and naturally she live-streamed it through Facebook Live. Almost 2.5 million people viewed it around the world. She made very candid comments about her emotional struggles following the death of her husband last year. He was the CEO of an online software company called SurveyMonkey. She said losing her husband helped her find deeper gratitude. Have you listened to that speech yet?
I did listen to it. It was pretty heart-wrenching.
I know. I was almost like crying when I was listening to it as well. Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg was one of the first to leave a comment. He wrote, beautiful and inspirational. Thank you. Many other notable Facebook users also left comments, and all in all, more than 6,000 people left comments to that live stream.
Yeah, Jay, I could see why. It was very, very thought-provoking. So what else is trending?
U.S. presidential race. Surprise, surprise. Democratic contender Hillary Clinton said if she gets elected, her husband, Bill Clinton, would be in charge of stimulating the economy. On the other side, former GOP contender Ben Carson named Sarah Palin, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, Marco Rubio, and Chris Christie as potential VP nominees for Donald Trump.
Oops, that's spilled the beans.
I know, and that's a very expansive list, right?
Absolutely.
Back to you, Lori.
All right, thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G Abby Lee, and we also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA underscore IE. Here are some of the other stories we're following on VOAnews.com. Donald Trump feuds with Brits over the Muslim ban plan. Obama's school transgender bathroom mandate draws ire. The Dominican Republic president set to win a second term. Tantalizing remains of an ancient earth-shaking asteroid. And an African woman is named the first FIFA Secretary General. Read more on these stories and much more on VOAnews.com or on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. And now to the U.S. presidential election. Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton campaigned across Kentucky on the eve of the state's Tuesday primary, desperate to improve her standing among working-class white men and painting sharp contrasts with her likely election adversary, Donald Trump.
And when you have someone running for president who has been so demagogic and engaged in insulting so many people, that further divides us. And that's not who we are as Americans.
Clinton's rival, Bernie Sanders, is gunning for victory in the Bluegrass State, building on his win last week in neighboring West Virginia, as he battles to keep his long-shot nomination bid alive. And, of course, there is never a dull moment on the Republican side with a presumptive nominee. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson joins me in studio to talk about that.
There is never any shortage of drama when it comes to Donald Trump. So he had a couple of different issues pop up for him over these past few days. The first one was that his new helper, Ben Carson, who we will remember as a former presidential candidate, is actually talking about his possible vice presidential shortlist, which is something that Trump probably didn't want revealed before the convention. He's been talking a lot about how he wants the convention to be exciting and dramatic, and revealing your VP shortlist might not be the way to do that. But, of course, we love hearing who is on that list.
And tell us.
We have Ted Cruz. We have Marco Rubio. We have Sarah Palin. So these are all very familiar names, very familiar political names. Now, Marco Rubio has said point blank that he will not be Trump's VP. So it remains to be seen whether any of these will actually pan out. Now, Sarah Palin, of course, has campaigned for Donald Trump. So,
but Ted Cruz, boy, they had a pretty rough go at it toward the end there as competitors.
I think that the two of them would have to have a couple of sit downs before that actually materialized. Yes.
Absolutely. And I know Trump is also getting a lot of slack this week over several articles relating to his dealings with women.
Right. So the New York Times did a pretty in-depth investigation, taking a look at his decades worth of history with women, from the women that he dated to the women that he's hired at his various companies. And at least from the New York Times reporting, what emerged was a very consistent pattern of Trump focusing on women's looks to the detriment of their intelligence and their humanity, which, you know, if you followed the campaign and heard some of the things he said about women and to journalists like Megyn Kelly, may not really come as much of a surprise. He's hit back and said, you know, obviously he's hired women at his companies. This doesn't show the real pattern. there will be a back and forth about this for the rest of the campaign season.
No doubt. And it is winding down, but we have two more primaries now.
That's right. Primary Tuesday. So we have Kentucky and I believe Nebraska. And the interesting thing about Kentucky is that we think that Bernie Sanders will probably beat Hillary Clinton there. So don't forget about the Democrats. They're still going to. Bernie Sanders still very much wants to be alive. His candidacy is keeping it going. And he'll keep it going all the way until California. Kentucky will help him along with that.
Is it really mathematically even possible for, even if Hillary loses, she doesn't seem like she can lose with the number of delegates that she has.
I don't remember the exact math, but the last time I heard it was something in the 95, you'd have to win 95% of the remaining delegates or something even higher of a number. So, no. It's really not mathematically possible for Bernie Sanders to secure the nomination, but that doesn't matter to him at this point. A lot of his former campaign workers have put together a letter talking about how they keep the movement of his candidacy going all the way through the summer into the general election. That's the conversation that's important for Bernie.
I also heard Hillary on the campaign trail talking about the role of the first gentleman, Bill Clinton, her husband, talking about that she will recruit him to in some way. What are you hearing about
that? That's right. She said that Bill would need to come out of retirement and he needs to help with the economy. So, yes, she is saying that she needs to bring Bill out of retirement, that he will be needed on her team to help revitalize the economy. She has asked him to do that, and he has been talking about that out on the campaign trail.
So, basically, two Clintons for the price of one?
That's the deal.
Anything but boring this election season, for sure.
That is for sure.
All right. Well, there is another Donald Trump controversy brewing as well. He says he may end up having a bad relationship with British Prime Minister David Cameron after Cameron called the presumptive Republican presidential nominee divisive, stupid, and wrong for proposing a temporary ban on Muslims entering the United States. In an interview with Britain's ITV network, Trump responded.
Well, number one, I'm not stupid, okay? I can tell you that right now. Just the opposite. Number two, in terms of divisive, I don't think I'm a divisive person. I'm a unifier. Unlike our president now, I'm a unifier. Looks like we're not going to have a very good relationship. Who knows? I hope to have a good relationship with him. But it sounds like he's not willing to address the problem either.
Britain and the United States have what they call a special relationship, but Cameron's office Monday refused to retract earlier comments about Trump. In the interview, Trump also attacked London's new mayor, Sadiq Khan, the first Muslim elected to run a Western capital city. Khan had branded Trump as, quote, ignorant on Islam and said he hopes he loses the U.S. election.
When he won, I wished him well. Now, I don't care about him. I mean, it doesn't make any difference to me about him. Let's see how he does. I mean, let's see if he's a good mayor.
A Khan spokesman Monday again described Trump's views as ignorant, divisive, and dangerous. It's the politics of fear at its worst, he said, and will be rejected at the ballot box. U.S. financial markets are on the move again, up about 1% thanks to news about disruptions in Nigeria's oil production. That has dampened concerns about a prolonged glut of oil on world markets. Investors are also encouraged by a large stock purchase by one of the biggest names out there. International Edition's Jim Stevenson spoke to VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino for some insight into this and the news that Warren Buffett now owns a chunk of Apple.
Yeah, according to a regulatory filing, he put about $1 billion into the position. It's the first time ever that he's had a position in the iPhone maker. Shares were trading just about 2% higher on the news, and this took the Nasdaq up higher following 4 weeks of losses because of recent weakness in Apple. So Buffett, the regulatory filing says that he bought these shares prior to March 31st. Since then, Apple has taken about a $16 haircut, with the exception of today's trading. So, you know, going into trade last Friday, Apple was actually down 14% on the year. So if retail investors took the opportunity to piggyback on the news out of Berkshire Hathaway, they got an even better deal than he did. The biggest concerns with Apple right now is the iPhone 7 replacement cycle has investors questioning whether Apple itself is expecting the iPhone 7 to decline significantly from the 6S. Sentiment right now is pretty negative about the replacement cycle because the question is, what's new with the 7 that I absolutely have to get when my 6 still works? And in many cases, a lot of people still have their 5s. So that's really what the question is right now. But it's interesting with Buffett getting in at what seems to be around the highs. David Tepper's Appaloosa Management disclosed last week they blew out of their Apple position. Tiger Asset Management today, it broke around 12 o'clock today that they got out of their position. Carl Icahn, another well-known investor, got out of his position. So it's interesting that these are all happening at once. And, you know, part of the concerns with Apple, in addition to the replacement cycle, is declining sales in China. Now, Tim Cook is in Beijing this week, making the rounds there, trying to improve relationships and sales over in China. So there's so many different types of activity going on in Apple. So it really is anyone's guess right now.
Warren Buffett has not been a big tech investor, but clearly he thinks he sees something in there that others don't.
Right. Well, you know what? He also increased his stake in IBM. These are two names that have been beaten down, whereas some stocks in the tech sector have done really, really well. And it could be, again, you can't be a growth stock forever. Right now, the focus is on Facebook. It's on an Amazon, which are the leaders in the market right now. So perhaps Buffett is seeing that there is some value here, which is his classical fundamental way of investing.
Well, maybe he's just turning in his flip phone. Let's flip to oil. What's happening with oil in the markets? I understand that the financial markets are up on some news.
Oh, yeah. Crude oil prices jumped over 2% to almost $49 this morning, which is the highest that we've seen it since November. Part of the reason is ongoing and growing concerns about Nigerian output disruptions. But the real bull case today was Goldman Sachs. They've been a long-time bear. For about 2 years, they've been negative on the crude oil complex. They said in a note this morning that the years of oil supply glut are now actually in a deficit. So energy shares were obviously leading the way in early trade today, and it's really what's taking up the Dow and S&P throughout the entire session. But one thing, you have to read the entire note. You're just getting the headline here. They are actually seeing that we will have a supply glut towards the end of 2016 and 2017. So it's very curious, the timing, as we're going into Memorial Day, peak driving, and sort of all this bullish news is coming out. So I find the timing a little bit curious, not to get too conspiracy theory on you, but it provided a nice bid into the market, and we'll see if that continues or if this was just a one-day type of event. But this Apple story is really going to be something interesting to follow as well.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
The World Health Organization is issuing its first ever guidelines to help health workers provide better physical and psychological care to the more than 200 million girls and women worldwide living with female genital mutilation. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Every year, the World Health Organization reports some 3 million girls, most under age 15, are subject to female genital mutilation. This number adds to the hefty toll of more than 200 million girls and women already living with the harmful consequences of this brutal, inhumane practice. Female genital mutilation, or FGM, involves the partial or total removal of external genitalia or other injury to the female genital organs for non-medical reasons. The practice is highly prevalent in 30 African countries and a few countries in Asia and the Middle East. With increased global migration, more cases of FGM are occurring in Europe and North America. Coordinator in WHO's Department of Reproductive Health and Research, Lale Sai, says FGM can cause immediate problems such as pain, severe bleeding, and even death.
It has high risks during pregnancy and childbirth, both for the woman who is delivering, but also for her baby. It can cause obstetric tears, difficult labor, and even loss of the baby at the time of the delivery. Other health problems, longer-term health problems, include psychological risks, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder.
WHO notes health workers often are unaware of the negative consequences of FGM and do not know how to treat them. The health agency's recommendations focus on preventing and treating obstetric complications and on helping women with depression and anxiety disorders. The guidelines also warn against the so-called medicalization of FGM. WHO medical officer Doris Chu says doctors must refuse requests from family members to perform FGM, believing that to be a safer procedure.
Medicalization is never acceptable because it violates medical ethics, as it is a harmful practice. Medicalization itself perpetuates FGM, and the risks outweigh any perceived benefits. But as healthcare providers, we actually need to recall that we need to uphold the Hippocratic Oath, and that is to do no harm.
WHO says the guidelines can help ongoing global efforts to end female genital mutilation by better informing the health community about the many health risks associated with FGM. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Well, one of the most popular beers in the U.S. is renaming itself. I talked about that story with Chris Morris. He is the contributing writer to Fortune and CNBC.
Every summer, Budweiser and Anheuser-Busch try and do something a little bit to stand out from the pack because summer is the big drinking season, of course. This year, they're changing the name of Budweiser to America on their cans and their bottles, and it kind of ties in with the Super Bowl ad campaign they started off. If you'll remember, they had the ad with Seth Rogen and Amy Schumer, and so this is kind of an extension of that, but it's already backfiring for them online.
Why?
Well, the primary thing is that Budweiser is not an American brand anymore. It's actually owned by Anheuser-Busch InBev, which is based out of Belgium. So it just took a matter of moments before someone redid the can that says America and put Belgium on there. And also there's a community, the craft beer community is pretty strongly anti-Budweiser because it's the big beer and because they have so much shelf space. And you're seeing a lot of people kind of push back to this right now. The thing is that Budweiser really doesn't care about that. They're talking to their base. They're trying to make sure they're not losing more customers to these new brands and to Coors Light and other beer brands like that. So it's an interesting play. I'm not sure how successful it will be. Obviously, they're playing off of the election year. This is going to run until November. But, you know, we'll see what happens with it.
But when you think of Budweiser, you don't think of Belgium. You do kind of think sort of the all-American beer. It seems like it's a domestic beer, so to speak. And they really seem to be ramping this whole idea up with swapping the label and having lyrics to the Star Spangled Banner and a picture of the Statue of Liberty.
Budweiser is doing all it can to reinforce its image as an American brand, because it was just back in 2008 that August Anheuser-Busch IV, who owned the brewery then, said it would never be sold on his watch. But then the shareholders of the company, like Berkshire Hathaway and Barclays, they said, look, there's a lot of money on the table here, and it got sold off for $52 billion. Right now, Anheuser-Busch InBev is working on a merger with Miller Coors. If that happens, it's going to be an even bigger kind of mess with all these multinational beers. And so they want to make sure that people think of America when they think of Budweiser.
Are you saying this is going to backfire?
I don't know if it's going to backfire. Like I said, they're talking to their base, and their base loves Budweiser no matter what. So is it going to get a lot of snark online? Sure. Is the craft beer community going to have a field day with this? Yep, absolutely. But is it going to really impact sales one way or the other? I'd be surprised.
All right. Chris Morris, contributing writer to Fortune and CNBC. The International Space Station celebrated a major milestone Monday, 100,000 orbits. Those orbits around the globe add up to more than 4.6 billion kilometers, or 10 round trips from Earth to Mars. That, according to NASA. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of International Edition. So glad you could spend some time with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You can also find us anytime at voanews.com. We appreciate your being here. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action agreed to by the European Union, the P5 plus one countries, and Iran, nuclear-related sanctions imposed on Iran were lifted in exchange for Iran's taking a series of verifiable steps that prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon and ensure its nuclear program will be exclusively peaceful. U.S. officials have said that so far Iran has fulfilled its commitments under the JCPOA, as the plan is called. But Iranian leaders have complained that the economic benefits Iran was to receive after the nuclear-related sanctions were removed have not materialized. Some banks and corporations have expressed reluctance to do business with Iran for fear of transgressing sanctions that remain in place. To clarify what business is now permitted under the JCPOA, Secretary of State John Kerry and representatives of the U.S. Treasury Department met in London with several top executives from European banks. Secretary Kerry said the purpose of the meeting was to put to rest misinterpretations or mere rumors about how this is applied. We want to make it clear that legitimate business, which is clear under the definition of the agreement, is available to the banks, he said, as long as they do their normal due diligence and know who they're dealing with. They're not going to be held to some undefined and inappropriate standard. Secretary Kerry added, this was really an effort to listen to the bankers, to hear from them what their perceptions are, the hurdles that they see to moving, and to be able to address those as directly as we can, and define for them our interpretation of the law and of the standards, so that there's a clarity going forward, and, hopefully, an ability to do those things that are meant to be done under the agreement. Secretary Kerry said both sides have an obligation to live up to this agreement, and both sides need to get the benefit of the agreement. Our benefit is that we see a nuclear program that is now visible, open to inspection, understandable, restrained, and living up to the standards of the International Atomic Energy Agency. And they have an expectation that the sanctions that were supposed to be lifted are in fact lifted, and that the implementation is appropriate.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.